From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made this past October when Dove released a new ad for Dove Body Wash. The short ad featured a black woman wearing a brown shirt. She removed her shirt to reveal a white woman wearing a white shirt. Immediately, viewers demanded to know why Dove thought it would be wise to imply that body wash, something designed to make us cleaner, should include an image of a black woman becoming white. As the New York Times reported, the ad evoked a long-running racist trope in soap advertising of a, quote, dirty black person being cleansed into whiteness, end quote. There are examples of this going back to the 1870s. Now, Dove explained that the full ad included, yes, a black woman revealing a white woman underneath, but then the white woman removes her shirt to reveal a Latina woman underneath, but Dove said, they're pulling the ad, it was wrong, it missed the mark, and they apologized. And that has sparked discussion about what cultural sensitivity means in advertising. It most surely does not mean that Pepsi should have hired Kendall Jenner to play a newly woke woman who joins a protest against police, only to defuse all of the tension by giving a police officer a can of Pepsi. That was an obvious mistake, one that makes us wonder who exactly is in the meeting rooms for these companies, who approved these ads. There are examples of cultural reflection, though, that demonstrate how companies can get it right. And we're going to discuss that and how they can get it right going forward with our panel for the hour. Juanita Washington is editor-in-chief of Breakthrough Magazine. Juanita, welcome to the program.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Andrea Holland is public speaking and communications coach. Andrea, welcome back.
Thank you.
Lena De La Ferrier is a creative arts advocate. Lena, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And Anne Essie is creative director and change strategist. Anne, welcome to the program to you.
Thank you.
All right, Andrea Holland. What would you have told Dove before they even released that ad?
What wouldn't I have said, Evan? Nope, nope, and nope. How about that? Nope to the soap ad. That was just, you know, it's funny how even still seeing ads like that, it still jars people in this day and age. You know, we've seen so many images throughout the years of just biased, awful, flat out, you know, racist and terrible campaigns, and it still exists. And every time you see it, for me, at least, I just sit back and go, really? Really? Someone let that pass muster? Quite a few people let that pass muster? How is that possible? Especially with a brand that has become synonymous, you know, with their body campaign about inclusion and being accepting about all different body types. How does that actually happen?
You know, the hashtag Oscar so white, maybe we should have a hashtag advertiser so white, because Juanita Washington, I assume these things happen because there's not a whole lot of diversity in boardrooms or in advertising rooms. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, and that's the real issue here is diversity and inclusion. And I think that it speaks to a larger issue involving not only having diversity in the room, but actually having those voices heard and actually, you know, honored and taken seriously. And, you know, sometimes you can have the voice in the room and it's overlooked or it's ignored. And to really make sure that you're paying attention to the people who are in the room and actually giving them a place at the table is very important.
And when I say I don't know what Dove's breakdown is, but according to the Ad Color Partnership Guide, they cite the Bureau of Labor Statistics, of the 582,000 Americans employed in advertising and communications as of 2014, fewer than half were women, 6.6% are black or African American compared to 13.3% of the population. So the representation in ad boardrooms is half for black, the African American population compared to the actual population. 10.5% of people in advertising and communications are Hispanic compared to 17.8% of the population. And there are fewer than 100 black female executives in advertising, PR, and related industries in the entire country. So I guess that those are the numbers behind what Juanita's talking about.
Yeah, and you know, it's a huge issue. And but you know what? The important thing to note is that it's not even advertising and PR or communications. I think this spans across all industries. It's important to have diversity because those voices, and those ads are the exact reason why it's important to have those voices in the room. You know, and it's not just maybe having one person in the room, but maybe making sure that your workforce is inclusive and it includes all talented people and not just a small pool who may represent one community.
Okay. Lena, what are your thoughts on the Dove ad and what you might have said in that room?
I absolutely not. I mean, I just don't understand how all of that was passed. And Also, I mean, and I'm assuming there was a pre-screening to, I would hope, their prospective consumers. Did anyone say anything? Did anyone bring it up? Another thing that I do realize is it reflects the corporate culture. I mean, the fact that they may be hierarchical, they may say, well, we'll take your input, but then still want to go their own way. And it also reflects the diversity in their own organization. I mean, if no one is there to speak up about it, no one is going to notice. Well, hopefully.
But Lena raises, I think, an important point about even if you do have some people of color, for example, on a staff in a hierarchical company, that voice is not, I mean, the voice is there, but it's not often included. And so here's an example. Simon Pratt, senior brand strategist at Saatchi & Saatchi Wellness, said, quote, "There's always the conundrum of being one of the only black women at a table. And if you are passionate or if you push back, you feel you may be viewed as the, quote, angry black woman. I have been told to calm down when I am passionately expressing my views. A man or a man of color would never be told that." I'm sorry, Simone Pratt, and from Saatchi & Saatchi Wellness. So Simone's point there is, even when there is a person of color or a woman of color, it can feel difficult to be forceful in your expression, to say, we can't run this, you know, that this is hurtful, this is problematic. It lines up with what you're saying, Lena?
Yes, and I mean, the added thing is, being a trans woman of color, we have to include transgender employees and their inputs and their thoughts. And speaking as a trans woman of color, it sometimes is difficult to get your point across or your opinion across, being the only person of color in an organization or at a meeting. It's unfortunate, but it does happen.
Yeah, and as a woman of color, Andrea, you know, I saw you responding to some of what I was, the quote from Simone.
Trying to keep my cool over here?
No! Look, I can't relate as a white man, and I think it is unfortunate that I get to glide through life never having to say, wait a second, if I say this, will I be perceived as angry? I mean, that is an advantage.
It's infuriating to be perceived that way, and I've been on both ends of the spectrum, and we were actually chatting about this a little bit downstairs earlier before we came into the studio. There's the one side of things where, yes, if I speak up and I say anything, I will actually have this in my career. I had a man who was senior to me just look at me and say, calm it down, girl. I wanted to meet him in the parking lot, but
Lena's jaw just
yeah. You know, there's that end of the spectrum. And then the other end of it is, I've been the sole minority female who I'm multi-ethnic. So, you know, I've got a whole lot of things going on. And I'm supposed to represent the entire mass population of African-American thought or Latina thought. You know, not the white perspective, because that just doesn't count when you're my skin color. But nonetheless, it's and I'm being facetious about that. It's frustrating because it's like, well, you speak on behalf of everybody. How can I, one person, speak on behalf of an entire group? It's not fair. It's short-sighted. And from a marketing or business perspective, you have to rely on more than just that. Because if that one voice is all you're counting on, you are clearly missing the mark.
Anne Essie, as a creative director and change strategist, you know, Lena said, you know, she wondered, what was the conversation like when you're showing this to potential consumers? We make the assumption that they're sharing this with potential consumers. Do they do that? They should, right?
They should. They absolutely should. But it doesn't always happen. I mean, the world of content creation, advertising, marketing, communications, whatever you want to call it, moves so quickly. And often, you know, something is created and it's got to go and you got to keep it moving. And unfortunately, you know, and we talked a little about this before we came on the air, it takes courage to stand up and say, listen, I might be the person just uploading this onto your website, but you spent the dollars in producing this thing, but no, it can't go. But, you know, it's a risky thing to do, but we need to do more of that.
I want to play some sound from a couple of ads that, at least as a consumer, I liked. And I will explain why I liked it. The reason is, I think it's, you know, we talked about the Pepsi ad. If you don't know the Pepsi ad, this was last April, and they had an extended video. It was like 2 or 3 minutes long. Kendall Jenner was one of the people featured, and there is what is pretty clearly a demonstration. There's police kind of lined up in militarized look, and it evoked demonstrations that we've seen, whether it's Black Lives Matter, protests regarding police community relations. And this is a Pepsi ad, and Kendall Jenner takes a can of Pepsi and walks up to one of the police officers at the front of the line and gives them the Pepsi, and it's like, now everybody's ready to party. We get it now. It's all good. And it was like, you've got to be kidding me. And they obviously, there was a lot of backlash there. My feeling as a consumer is, ultimately, if any of the panelists at the table or anybody in these boardrooms are working on these campaigns, you are doing work to sell products. So let's start with the fact that you're trying to increase sales. So it's risky to then preach. And it's certainly risky if you appear to be using people of color or movements or ideas as a prop to sell a product. Whereas if you're just reflective of our society in your ads, and you're still about the product, but your casting is reflective or the people writing is reflective, then I'm sort of down. And let's listen to this Campbell soup ad. This is Campbell soup ad. Campbell's had a couple of soup ads that I like because they had a Star Wars theme for soup ads and Star Wars shapes in their soups. And the first one's about a couple of parents. And the ad starts, and you're going to hear the dad trying to get the young kid to eat the Campbell soup.
Dun, 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 dun. Cooper, I am your father.
No, no, no. I am your father.
That's got to be the worst Vader ever.
Campbell's Star Wars soups.
How about you be Chewbacca?
Made for real, real life.
So it's two dads, and I love the whole, the two dads saying, I'm your father. No, I am your father. We're trying to do the best Vader. But they're still selling the soup. It was cute. I thought it was cute. It was fun. And I know we're just hearing the audio. What do you think, Andrea Hellen?
I mean, I embrace ads where I see, exactly as you said, Evan, the reflection of reality. There are many homes with two dads, two moms, a white parent and a black parent, a Latina mother and a whatever father. That's a reality. And I think when we can position that, or when we can see that, it's sort of a validation that, yes, we are like everybody else. We're not different. But there's a line. There's obviously a line. And where it can get preachy as well.
Yeah, and that's where, so Juanita, I think of a Cheerios ad from the last couple of years that, so here's another ad that was just about selling a product. And Cheerios likes to say, and I don't know all the medical claims or the science claims, but they like to claim that they're good for cholesterol or heart healthy. I don't know, it's a cereal. How good can it be? Let's set aside that claim. Let's set aside that claim. That's part of what they want the consumer to think. Mm-hmm. And so they drew up an ad where a daughter, who looks like she's about 5 or 6, goes to her mom in the kitchen and was like, you know, and the daughter is a girl of color, and the mom is white. And the girl says, you know, hey, mom, I heard, you know, Cheerios are good for your heart. Is that true? And she's like, oh, yes, honey, you know, vitamins and minerals and Cheerios ad speak. And the daughter's like, okay. And then she takes the box of Cheerios and she walks out of the room. And the mom kind of has a strange look on her face, like, where's she going? And then the scene cuts to a tight shot of the dad who's laying on the couch sleeping, and he wakes up and he's covered in Cheerios because she wanted to pour Cheerios on his heart.
Yeah.
But it was clever. But the dad's black and the mom's white. And yes, it got some backlash because some people just can't handle that. But the main product was still, the ad was still about the message of the product. They just chose to cast it in this way. Now, when they cast it that way, they had to know that it's going to spark some discussion.
Yeah.
Is that okay? Is that okay? Is that wise? Is that, I mean, how do you view that kind of an ad?
Well, I think that it was very reflective of our community. And for a while, I mean, you'll even see today when you're watching television, very rarely do you see biracial children or couples on television in shows. And so I think that it was extremely clever. When I saw that ad, I thought that it really hit the mark because that is in a lot of homes. I mean, that is, you see more of that in homes than, you know, parents of the same, you know, culture or race. Because it's becoming a new reality for our community. And I think that we have to be reflective of that. And, you know, although you may get backlash, you should be reflective of your customers. And you have to touch base with that because that's how you connect with them. You can't sit in a room and decide, make decisions based upon customers, and you don't even connect with your, it shows that you're connected to your consumer.
Yeah, I guess, and if I were Cheerios listening to some of the backlash, which nobody should ever read the YouTube comments. We know that. But some of the backlash, I think I would have said, look, we're selling a product. We're not hiding the fact that we want you to buy Cheerios. Mm-hmm. We're not hitting you over the head with anything other than we like our product. It could be good for your heart. We think it's healthy. And we casted it in this way based on a choice. And if you don't like it, too bad. We're not. I mean, I think that's what I would have said. I don't know what Cheerios actually
said.
That'll
work for Cheerios.
What would you have said?
I would have said, what a touching message about mm-hmm. loving your dad, mm-hmm. you know, and wanting his heart to be okay.
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, that's what I would have said.
That's a great point. Cheerios could have said, oh, you think this was an ad about race? This is an ad about a child loving her dad, and we think our product helps him, and that's it. What you saw was race. We just casted it based on the community that we reflect.
Yep.
Okay. And then what would you tell a brand who hires you to say, but we know there's going to be backlash because some people find that stuff jarring? Too bad?
Too bad. Be brave.
Yeah.
Do something.
Yeah.
Stand up. Come on. Who's going to, come on.
Yeah.
Be brave.
Lena? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Lena. Yeah.
Oh, no. I mean, I think there would have been a different reaction if the mother was black and the father was white. And that reflects the history of advertisement, which ties into the history of colonialism. I mean, all these tropes in literature and movies of the white male or the white man and the non-white woman has become or was acceptable for a very long time. This idea of it in reverse, it's this dynamic of power and gender and race. So I don't think there would have been any backlash if it was the other way around.
Hmm. Interesting point. By the way, on the science of that claim, our friend Mike Johansson tweets at me to say, just for your information, that Cheerios claim about being good at lowering cholesterol is legit. And he says it's a case study in science-backed advertising claims that I use in my class at RIT. So
oh.
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah.
And I didn't mean, Cheerios, please do not sue me for questioning the science. It's not even the point.
Phil, you missed the mark.
Phil tweets at us to say, I think someone needs to ask, what was the intended point of the ad for Dove? Did Dove do an autopsy on how it occurred and sailed through the gates as it did? That seems to be the hole in this conversation. That's a good point, but anybody who's worked with you, I mean, I asked Ann earlier, do you think that they aired it with people? Surely there were conversations, as he calls it, an autopsy. They had to have done an autopsy.
Absolutely. And you know, we talked about this a little bit before we went on the air. There are the people that came up with that idea, and there's the people that wrote up the presentation mm-hmm. to the marketer for that idea. There was the meeting. There mm-hmm. was the reviews within the marketer, mm-hmm. right? And it came back in, and then somebody shot the the spot. Someone edited that spot. I mean, many, many hands had to see. It's not hard. It's not hard to see.
Even a short ad gets a lot of people working on it.
A lot
and
of people.
You can trace the steps and figure out who greenlighted this.
I know. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So, Phil, thank you for that. I think that's right. I'm sure that did happen. Juanita, you want to weigh in on their apology, because they've been criticized. Right now, we're in a world where there's a lot of apologies,
yeah.
and the art of the apology gets criticized. What Dove said was they actually wanted to create an ad that celebrates diversity, but they missed the mark and they apologized. I don't know how it celebrated diversity. But I mean, at some point, you just got to say we were wrong.
Right.
What do you think?
Right. I think you're right on that. I think, you know, everyone, listen, an apology is not easy for everyone, especially, you know, someone in Dove's position. But I think if you just come out and say, we missed the mark, and, you know, we understand the outrage. We understand why this could be taken offensively. And, you know, next time we're going back to the lab to really take a look at that and really make sure that our workforce is reflective of our consumers, because that's what it really boils down to. I mean, like we've mentioned before, is that, you know, so many people's hands have touched that, but if your inner circle only reflects a small percentage, then it's hard to get those voices because you may not see something. I mean, you mentioned it yourself. You said, I can't relate because I myself am a white male and I don't know what it's like to be in a room or what that feels like. And so when your group or your small group consists of that, it's hard to see outside of that. So I think that although their apology, it was a half effort. You know, we missed the mark, but we tried to just own it. We missed the mark, and we're going back to the lab. And not only will we come out with things that attract our consumers, but we're going to take a look at our workforce.
That's a great point. Yep. If they had a note on that, that would have
been
even more powerful.
Yeah, see what they're doing today.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, you know, at the end of the day, you can test. You can say, well, we're all like this on the inside, but we'll take it out to test it.
Yeah.
Well, how about changing how you are on the inside?
Right.
Very true.
On both sides, the creators and the marketers. Mm-hmm.
Andrea, can I ask you just a little bit about Dove, more broadly speaking, has spent the last decade trying, I don't want to say a new kind of ad, but they've gotten a lot of attention for their ads because they have gone with the idea, I think, generally speaking, a healthy idea, that beauty should not be narrow, that beauty is not just size two, that beauty comes in different forms. And I think that's a healthy thing. In the UK, they had some trouble because they started selling Dove soap in different shaped bottles as of saying there's all kinds of different shapes out there. And that didn't go over very well. But in general, is that a good intention, or is that still a crass way to sell a soap?
Yeah, you know what comes to mind with all this is, dude, just sell me the soap, man.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, sell me the soap, the shampoo, whatever you got. If it's going to work, then I'm all for it.
Right.
I mean, I can appreciate, you know, the art form that is advertising, attempting to promote social good and social awareness, and that's wonderful. But stop trying to mask it all with, you know, all by I know all body sizes are great. I mean, by that understanding, my mother should have been selling soap. I don't know how many years ago when I was, you know, an adolescent going, Mom, I look awkward. And she's, you're beautiful no matter what color, what size, whatever you are. You don't own that, Dove, sorry, or any other marketer out there. I don't need you to tell me that I'm beautiful at any size or any color or any shape. I already know it. Sell me the soap. Thank you.
Now, but on those lines, if I were working for Dove and I said, okay, so Andrea, I'm listening, I'm hearing what you're saying, but can we be less overt? Because Dove's been overt with their language in these ads. Some of these are long, sort of produced mini documentaries about how people see themselves. Can they just cast ads that have a diversity of models in the ads of different racial backgrounds, sizes, as opposed to, you know, the thin woman, you know.
There's nothing wrong with that
shower.
Because that reflects their consumers. That reflects
That's more on the mark,
society.
How you cast.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't want to see an ad of just one color because that's not the world that I live in. And if that ruffles feathers, then that ruffles feathers. I think that's the line that you stand on as a product, you know, is having the courage to reflect what really is, not trying to get super uber creative and force feed me some metaphor or analogy because you think it looks cool.
So in advertising, show, don't tell so much. Just show.
I mean, that's my perspective.
Because if the Campbell's ad had finished with Campbell supports marriage equality, and you're a soup. That's awesome.
Right.
But you're like,
just sell me the soup.
You know, but if you want to cast two dads instead of a mom and a dad, cool.
Great.
So that's a show me, don't tell me. Don writes to us on Twitter and says, to whom should we be culturally sensitive? Isn't the two dads ad insensitive to the traditional marriage crowd? Doesn't focusing too much on offense grant everyone a heckler's veto? Hold on. You reacted the most there.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
I'm going to reserve my response here to just say that if you look historically at advertising and marketing throughout the ages in the U.S., who has been most deeply offended? And if we're going to take a count of things, let's not get so butthurt about things, okay? I'm just being honest. Let's not get so upset to say, well, I'm offended. Are you? That's too bad. I'm sorry.
But Don might say the same. I mean, like, it sounds like he would say the same to you about ads.
I'm sure. But, you know, we're going to stand here and say that that's offensive. There's been a lot of advertising that's been offensive since the dawn of man. So let's not start counting tallies now because it's convenient. Sorry, Don.
Lena? Everybody's taking a breath.
I mean, advertisements reflect the culture. And regardless of our color, culture, or creed, we are all Americans and should be treated as such. So, yes, there'll be some people offended, but it reflects the diversity in our community, local, state, national. What is the problem?
Okay.
She said that much more eloquently than I did.
Well, I think it goes to the fact of who do you want to purchase your product? So if that's all that you want to market to and that's the only customer you think you have, then by all means, go right ahead and only say, we would only like for these certain people to purchase our product, and this is who we are marketing to. We don't care about people who come from, you know, same-sex couples. We don't care about, you know, interracial families. We don't care about people of color. We just want to market to traditional homes, what we consider traditional homes. And let's see how that works out. Because ultimately, it'll impact your bottom line. And if you want all your consumers to embody everyone, then you should embody that as well.
Okay. Anne, what do you think?
You know, that's one really good point about it affecting your bottom line. And that's really the thing that's going to, I mean, influence this thing in the long run, you'd hope, right? Yeah. And there's been a lot of backlash with some of this negatively received advertising where people are just like, I don't buy it anymore. So, you know, we'll see.
I saw, if I can interject, I saw a Facebook post from a friend recently discussing there is a brewery that produces a beer that has a name to it that could be viewed as offensive to women. It's a derogatory term. And so this friend of mine posted saying, hey, FYI, this brewery, many of us drink their beers. They're selling this beer. It's offensive to women. We should be mindful of that and just vote with our dollar and not purchase their product any longer. And folks commented exactly what you might hear, what you might expect to hear, which is, you know, why do they have to curtail what it is that they're doing? You know, just don't buy their beer. Or why do you have to make a big stink out of the fact that this product exists? And it's interesting because it's similar to the conversation that we're having here about, you're correct. If you want to just market to that person or that particular demographic, go for it. But beware that mm-hmm. people will vote with their dollars and with mm-hmm. you know, their social voice.
An email from Richard says, Evan, ads should promote a product. Enough social intervention in advertising. I avoid purchasing products whose advertising tells me how to behave rather than why I should purchase their product. Is that all your marketing department could come up with? It wouldn't say much for your product. So I, in many ways, Richard, I think the panel is saying that you got to start by understanding if you're selling a product, you're selling a product. And be very careful if you want to get into social messaging, especially when people are going to connect it to you trying to maybe use it as a prop for the bottom line. That's pretty precarious. We're late for our only break of the hour. Listeners, if you want to call the program and weigh in, what are your favorite ads or what are the ads that maybe bother you or everything in between? You can call 844-295-TALK. It's toll free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Do you want companies to take a risk and tell you how they feel about social issues in their advertising? Has anything affected you or moved you one way or another? And what is up with that Dove ad? You can call the program. You can email me, connections@WXXI.org. And you can find us, as some of you are already doing, on Twitter at Eben Dawson or producer Megan Mack at MMack Media. Our guests include Juanita Washington, editor-in-chief of Breakthrough Magazine, Andrea Holland, public speaking and communications coach, and SE creative director and change strategist, and Lena De La Ferrier, who is a creative arts advocate. We're right back on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on The Next Connections, journalist David K. Johnston joins us first hour. His new book is called It's Even Worse Than You Think. It's about the Trump administration, the breaking of norms, potentially the breaking of laws, and more. David K. Johnston, first hour. In our second hour, when a student shows up at school without money for lunch, something called lunch shaming can happen. There's a movement to stop it We will discuss it in our second hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Dove sparked this conversation when they put an ad out a couple of months ago that they had to pull probably within about 18 seconds of releasing the ad, I want to say. There was immediate backlash. The ad featured a black woman wearing a brown shirt. She removes her shirt to reveal a white woman wearing a white shirt. And this is a soap ad. There is a long history in this country of soap companies essentially telling people that soap could remove melanin, that white is clean, that white is pure. It's a big, big problem. And Dove said they didn't sort of realize that, and that it was a mistake, and that they apologize. But we're talking about how those mistakes are made or how that happens, cultural sensitivity in ads, what's appropriate and what is not. And I said during our brief break, I got an email from a listener named Mark who was complaining that modern advertising too often caricatures white dads as being idiots in ads. And I'm sure there are some that do that, Mark. Andrea Holland, do you have any sympathy for the white dads who get
you're aiming for me, Evan. I'm trying to be cool. No. I don't think there's any demographic that hasn't been poked fun at in terms of being, you know, the stupid dad or the silly mom or the neurotic mom or the crazy whatever role you play. I think that for the longest time, it's been fair game by advertisers. And it's you know, only within recent history that people are questioning, is that PC? Is that cool to say? I don't know. And as I said earlier, you know, don't get all hurt now, because the tally's been going for a long time. That's all I'm going to say.
Lena, you have all the sympathy for those white dads who get caricatured as buffoons?
I honestly haven't seen any ads that reflect that trope. So I'm still thinking of any, but I don't have sympathy now.
As the white dad in the room, I don't really, it doesn't bother me. I'm okay. I mean, like, comedy comes in many forms, and yeah, I don't know. Juanita, any sympathy there for Mark's position?
Well, you know, the reason why I would say not so much is because there has been history, and you have to realize that though that sector has been, you know, publicized in many different ways. And when you've only seen that played out or that role played out for certain races or ethnicities, that's where you become offended by it. But when there are so many different avenues where we see white men play so many different roles for so many different years, it's a different form. So that just becomes one section of that community, because we see wide variety when it comes to white men in the workplace, stay-at-home dads. So we get a variety of white men over the air, print, TV, radio, everywhere.
Anne?
I love what you just said. It is true. I think, and with the caller that was called in before the break, wouldn't it be great that someday we have advertising that truly reflects what our society and culture is about? We won't have these, you're insulting me, because we'll all be represented.
Well said. And by the way, Dove's not the only, I was going to say soap or beauty. What is Nivea? Is that?
It's a beauty product.
Beauty company. So they had a deodorant ad that said white is purity last year. And white supremacists on 4chan actually took to saying, everyone buy Nivea. Nivea's on our side. And Nivea was like, wait, this is not a white supremacist ad. That was a mistake. But listen, Nivea's track record includes 6 years ago. They had to apologize after an ad showed a black man preparing to throw away his old afro-wearing head behind the words, re-civilize yourself.
Oh,
wow.
Oh,
wow.
They promised at the time to review current development and approval processes for ads and try to avoid any kind of future misleading interpretations. This is where I go back to what Juanita said earlier. Nivea should have just said at the time, we are going to increase diversity on staff and this will never happen again, period.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why it's important, because and you know, and I think we talked about it a little bit a little earlier, is that, you know, when you do that inclusive and when you do include people of all different genders, you know, ethnicities on your staff, it's important to make sure that it's in all parts and all levels of your staffing, right? So not just on the entry level position will we make that more diverse, but we need to have decision makers who are also of diversity or, you know, of different ethnicities, because ultimately it goes back to, I think what Lynn was saying is that, you know, I can speak up and say something, but what will happen after I do? And will it be taken seriously, or will I be marked as that angry, you know, black woman, you know? So it's important to have those decision makers also be of people of color.
Let me get to Julian in Geneva on the phone. Go ahead, Julian.
Hi. I just had a comment and a question about Dove. Megan Mack helped confirm for me that the same company that owns Dove also owns, like, the Axe body spray line. Mm-hmm. And I'm of the opinion that marketing and messaging is pretty misogynistic and just generally bad towards both men and women. So just with that in mind, I'm kind of distrustful of the company, and it seems like them sort of moving towards this body positive imaging and marketing is almost sort of taking advantage of a movement. Maybe I'm being a little negative and distrustful here, but with that being said, I was just curious what your guests thought about that, and if they sort of have more hope for the company and what they're doing. Thank you.
Thanks, Julian. I don't know offhand the Axe ads, it's hard for me.
They're what you might imagine a cologne's body spray geared for men 18 to 34 with a hot bud would be geared for. And I would agree with the caller on that. I didn't realize that the same company owned Axe.
It's Unilever, yep.
Unilever, okay. So I didn't realize that. And yeah, I mean, you know, if I were to sit and think about recent ads that I've seen for it, it is, I think a lot of advertising is unfair to men, honestly. It's just as with women, there's been this whole push for, you know, we need to have more realistic body images and body types. And, you know, there's, what is it, the dad bod? Is that the joke? The dad mm-hmm. bod? Mm-hmm. I don't know what mm-hmm. the youngins say. But I think that, you know, a lot of advertising puts forth this idea that you have to look this way or be this way. And perhaps it's not as sensitive to men as it could be. I don't know if you guys mm-hmm. have thoughts on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think any time, I mean, as someone who has to develop creative work for advertising, you know, just hearing the story and adding another one of their brands, you know, coming into question. I mean, you're dealing with the body when you're selling soap, when you're selling body spray. It's a hard area. Mm-hmm. And maybe there's just a big general direction they need to take in another direction to not have to, you know, you could skip over some of this stuff. You know what I mean?
Okay. That's why I think, based on what I'm learning from all of the panelists here, if they called me in, I'd say, just cast your ads a little more thoughtfully. Don't be this narrow definition of beauty, stereotypical. Cast it, but don't try to hit people on the head with it. Don't be stereotypical with Axe body spray because, you know, guys are XYZ. You know, just be a little more thoughtful and think more about casting and stick to the message of why your product is a good product. Ray from Rochester emails. He wants to respond to Mark, who had said that he was tired of white dads being portrayed as stupid in advertising. Ray says, Mark, your comment on white dads often getting labeled as stupid in advertising is trying to make a case for reverse racism. White dads, white males, are not of the oppressed and can never be inflicted the type of racism, the life experience, and the lack of social privilege that the oppressed live with. It is not the same for you, pal. I'd recommend seeking out a local racial justice workshop group. White men need this education the most. That is from Ray in Rochester. Thank you, Ray.
Tell it, Ray.
Why are you laughing, Andrea Holland?
Someone had to say it.
So tell it, Ray, I guess, if that's how, you know, if that's honestly how he feels. And, you know, I'm not above saying that anyone could get offended by any of the imagery or marketing, advertising, anything we see out there. It's possible. I've been offended. You know, everyone can be offended. The question really comes down to, A, how much do you personally care? And B, you know, what are these companies doing to reflect the reality? And I think that's been a common theme around what we've said. And the responsibility really lies with them. Because if you're going to bring it to the masses, you have to be responsible for the message.
Okay.
You know, and I'll just throw something in there as someone who has to generate content, like come up with this stuff, right? We talk a lot about the marketers, the brands that are buying the stuff. I think that we could do very well to, you know, train and educate a whole new sales force of creative people out there that are the originators. So it doesn't come down to casting. It doesn't come down to testing. It's the people that are actually coming up with these ideas. And, you know, I'll just speak from my own experience. Marketing communications, advertising, all that stuff. It's kind of an opaque industry to get into. I know for me, I didn't know what these different roles were, art direction, creative. I didn't know any of that stuff. And I would suspect there are a lot of people out there, you know, high school kids, middle school kids, people deciding career choices. They just don't know. And we could do a lot better, I think, as an industry, bringing that out younger, you know, younger and younger, so people can know that that's even a career choice. So.
All right. Connie in Rochester on the phone is next. Go ahead, Connie.
Oh, I was just going to agree exactly with what was just said, that it's really part of the advertising industry, especially here in Rochester. If you go into any ad agency here in Rochester, you'll see the workforce is, you know, 99.9% white and middle class, and they're voicing images and copy that they know. And I've often wondered why there isn't more representation of just all different kinds of people in the advertising field. You know, many photo editing sessions, you know, they pick, well, where's the black person? And they go, like, look at the photo available and pick the whitest looking black person and throw them in the, you know, copy, the layout. So I don't know how to get more people just that reflect our world into the programs that lead into going into advertising. Like you said, the communications fields at the colleges around here, so that we can start making ads. The people that make the ads say, well, let's make an ad like us, about us, and that not other. It's not other. It's all different kinds of people making the ads for all different kinds of people.
Yeah.
So it's a prevalent here, right here in Rochester, the very, very single-sided kind of advertising agency employees.
Yeah, Connie, thank you. I mean, that's a point that Juanita Washington has been making all hour long, that we have to increase the ranks there and at every level of a company. But how? Any thoughts on how? Connie's, you know, sort of puzzling over that too.
You know, I want to take it back because I think that was a very great statement that was just made about knowing the options, because right now, you may not know the career choices that are available. So it comes down to recruiting, and it comes down to maybe developing partnerships with some of the, not just the colleges, but maybe some of the high schools and maybe some of the middle schools, you know, to really let children and students see what's available, because I may not know that's a career option. And so my focus may be very small. And so that makes, when I'm going into figuring out what I do for education, it makes me limited. It makes my skill set limited, because I never even thought to even consider that, or to go down that road, or to get training or skills that may suit that job.
Mm-hmm. It's exactly right.
Go ahead, Andrea, Lena, go ahead.
I would point out quickly, I love what you just said, and it's interesting to me because I was thinking as you were saying it that part of the challenge in recruiting at the younger level may also be that socially those voices have not been considered worthy. Mm-hmm. And so to recruit at that level, to recruit at a young age, you have to also foster the idea within that generation, that demographic, that your voice counts too. And it must be heard among the ranks of others as well. Not above, certainly not below, with an even weight.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I think within the organization, I mean, you shouldn't be reactive to engaging in diversity. It should always be proactive. You should always proactively, you know, work to make the office more diverse.
Yeah, no, certainly. Lena, I know exactly what you're saying there. And that goes, I think, Juanita's point earlier. We're talking about ads. We're talking about creative marketing.
what we're talking also about is sort of the state of affairs in a lot of American workforces. So Michael on Twitter, in Penfield called in with a question. He said, what do you think about this? We shouldn't look to the advertisers to be direct and honest. Their job is to be deceptive. That's an interesting way of framing it.
Silence across all mics.
I'll take it.
You go, girl.
Persuasive. I'm trying to connect you with a product or service that will, if we're having a good day, it's going to improve your life, or the lives of your family, things that are important to you. Persuasion. And if I'm doing a good job, I'm going to really find out a lot about you, meaningful, authentic things about you. And if I don't know, I'm going to ask a lot of questions. And then I'm going to tailor my message to hit you right between the eyes.
but deceptive. And I understand what Michael, I think, is saying. But I think deceptive is wrong because you may convince me to buy your product one time. Mm-hmm. If you tell me that this bottle of water actually tastes like Fruity Pebbles. And I'm like, I love that cereal. And then I buy it and I'm like, it tastes like water. You deceived me. I'm not buying it again. Yeah. So, and I actually don't love Fruity Pebbles. But Michael, the point being, I mean, deceptive I don't think is the right word, because if the relationship you have with your customers is that they feel deceived, maybe you would argue, no, you don't want them to know that what they don't know. But I think customers are pretty savvy. And I think you want them not to feel deceived, but to feel like they have an authentic relationship. And that's why I think Ann Essie, a creative director and change strategist, is talking about learning who your customers are, hitting them between the eyes, but not deceiving them. And so in relation to, you know, the conversation on representation in and reflection of community in advertising, I'm not sure deception's right. Do you think deception is the right word?
I agree with what you're saying, Evan. I do acknowledge that there is a lot of junk out there. There's a lot of ads that we've seen, you know, whether you're scrolling through social media or you're watching, you know, at 3 a.m. with terrible ads that run at that hour. There are bad advertisements out there. And there are things that we've seen that clearly make exaggerated claims. But if we're talking about brands that we are familiar with, know, like, and trust, or represent a product that we are eager to try, I wouldn't say that it's deceptive. I would say it's persuasive. And I don't fault those brands for having that as their job. I mean, I do want someone to sell me on products and let me know about things that are going to be good for me and make my life better. Just do it in a way that doesn't, A, put you on a pulpit to preach to me about something, and do it in a way that is sensitive. And if I am your target audience, then come get me. Mm-hmm. That's all I got to say about that.
Andrew in Rochester wants to weigh in. Go ahead, Andrew.
Yes. So I was listening to this on my way over to just pick up some groceries, and I heard you talking about, or heard someone talking about, how they don't like the concept of companies telling them how to behave socially.
That was one of our emailers. Yep.
Yeah. And I mean, that's, you know, as if that's not what happens when we see hundreds of ads every day showing us, you know, white opposite sex couples doing whatever. I mean, we're learning this stuff through the ads that we don't even realize that we are.
Yeah, I think what you're saying is when we normalize only a narrow set of standards, that it sends a message that is absorbed, even if it's not overt. Is that kind of what you're saying? That whether it's our behavior or our understanding of our world, if we only see white people in ads, if we only see straight couples in ads, it becomes part of what we're taught. Is that part of what you're saying?
Well, yes, and even more to that, it becomes what those ads and those companies are suggesting. That's how they're suggesting that we should behave.
Okay.
And to say that we don't like companies that are telling us to behave in certain ways is implying that these companies aren't.
Yeah, Andrew, thank you for the phone call. I mean, that's a very interesting insight, because I think what he's saying is whether companies want to accept it or not, your advertisements are a statement of sort of cultural norms and what you view as reflection of society. So even if you're not trying to send social messages, if you only cast men, if you only cast women, if you only cast white people, if you only cast people of whatever, then you are making some sort of a statement. And so just to be more aware that you are sending message. I think that's probably a valuable.
Absolutely, I would agree.
Part of the any disagreement there, Lena?
Oh no, I agree. I mean, one of the things that companies are changing the way it's not just selling a product. It's customer engagement. It's not just having them go to the store and buy their items. It's making them long time adherents or followers of their brand. And yes, you need to be more socially aware and conscious of what you're doing, and that's why a lot more companies are looking into social responsibility policies.
Yeah, and what it signals. Vanessa on Twitter says, many agencies and corporations would benefit from having someone, preferably a person of color, on staff whose job it is to critique their work. I'm sure that would cost less than making them pull ads. But I think that goes back to what Ann Essie said. There has to be just a better review process to begin with, whether it's one person or really crowdsourcing to your customers, asking people of all different backgrounds, and then maybe we avoid what happened with Dove. Juanita, some quick final thoughts. What do you want to send us out the door with as we think about cultural sensitivity in ads?
Well, you know, I think I'm going to stick to the theme I've had all hour. And, but what I would say is, you know, I know that advertising agencies, marketing, they can be in a tough spot because more people are not looking at commercials. You're not watching them. And, you know, and so.
Good point.
You know, I know, you know, you set your DVR, and you fast forward every time you get to a commercial. So I think most of them are trying to be racy, but I think just incorporating a diverse workforce would help you in trying to do that and accomplish it.
All right, well said. And that's a point for another show. Eventually, ads are going to be gone in some sort. Also, can we talk about automatically playing pop-up ads with loud audio? Why do we do that? Gosh. Stop doing that. Okay. Well, I just want to thank our panel. Juanita Washington, editor-in-chief of Breakthrough Magazine. Thank you, Juanita. Great having you here.
Thank you.
Ann Essie, creative director and change strategist. Thank you, Ann.
Oh, it's been wonderful. Thank you.
Lena De La Ferrier, who is a creative arts advocate. Lena, great having you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much.
Andrea Holland, public speaking and communications coach. Always good, Andrea. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Evan.
Our thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer, and Megan Max, the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon. We're right back with you Friday on member-supported Public Radio.